thought for today. What is little or big? This is an exclamation, it's not a question. What is little or big? What is little or big? To a child, things that are little to us are big to him. And to a little dog, things that are little to him are very little to us. And for a big dog, things that are big to him are equally big to us. What is little or big? What does this mean, to have something little or big? Everything falls around one particular word. It's a lovely word. The word is called attitude. And what kind of attitude do we have about anything? Whatever attitude we have, that's our experience. Now, is your attitude one of acceptance and enjoyment? Or is your attitude one of the world is out to get me? If your attitude is one of acceptance and enjoyment, then even a little tiny bit of acceptance and enjoyment is great big. And even a lot of acceptance and enjoyment is even better. Whereas even a little bit of feeling sorry for yourself, not accepting yourself, can destroy you. And a lot of not accepting yourself, feeling sorry for yourself, can utterly destroy you. They say about power. They say that power corrupts. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. Now, why would they say that power corrupts? Basically, because they say that power is something against you. Power is something that's in opposition to you. Power is something that is used to manipulate or control. And a little bit of power can soon grow into a lot of power. Because all things do grow from a little bit to a lot. A good attitude grows from just thinking good thoughts about yourself until finally you think good thoughts about yourself and the whole world. It just takes a little bit of medicine to make the sugar go down, doesn't it? Just a wee little bit of sugar to make the medicine go down, or however you want to put it. Just a little bit. So when we are feeling sorry for ourselves, we take that little bit of sugar, along with the statement, I like me. But I don't like me. But you do. You do. We had a statement the other day that generosity is giving what you want to give, not because another person needs it. Well, I had a couple of emails and telephone calls about that. People said, what do you mean by that? We always give people what they need. If the people are in need of food, we give them food. If they need clothing, we give them clothing. If they need understanding, we give them understanding. I said, no. I said, there's only one person in this world, and that's you or me. And I don't really ever give anything. I just am something. And if I see a person in need, I don't go over and say, here's the fulfillment of your need. You would like to buy that $1 million house and you haven't got a penny. Wouldn't we all like to do things that we haven't got the facility for? Do you think I would be a nice person to buy a $1 million house for a person who has nothing? I would be a very, very unkind person, because I would be putting them into a realm where they're not able to take care of it. They wouldn't be able to mow the lawns. Oh, that's a simple thing. No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't be able to keep the house clean. They wouldn't be able to pay the utility bills. They wouldn't be able to pay the taxes. They wouldn't be able to do these things. If they cannot do something with nothing that they have right now, how can they do something with something that they do have right now? You see, just having lovely things, just having big things and having a lot of things, doesn't mean that it's a blessing. Because you can have all these things and have no place to go. You've heard that statement. You're all dressed up and no place to go. We have all these little and big things about us. Well, I told these people, we give only because that's what we like. If we like ice cream, we give ice cream. But that person's diabetic and they can't have ice cream. That's just fine. That's what we give. They can give it away if they wish and make somebody else happy. But we give what pleases us. You ask a little child to go in and buy a present for his daddy. And he says, well, I think daddy would like to have a little race car. I think daddy would like to have some balloons. I think daddy would like to have a yo-yo. Things that the child likes, he thinks his father would like. Would his father like it? You bet. What if the little girl, daddy would like to have a doll just like mine? Yuck, you know? Daddy would like to have a doll just like hers. Because daddy doesn't think that dolls are for little girls and baseballs are for little boys. Daddy thinks that anything his daughter gives him is a treasure. If daddy doesn't think that, daddy isn't really a daddy. He's just a person who is living his own life. Now, if the little girl gives a doll to daddy or her jacks to daddy, you know what jacks are, don't you? You play a game with him, bounce a ball, and you flip the jacks out. What would the daddy say? He'd say, wow, what a lovely gift. And he takes the jacks to the office and he puts them on his desk and he throws them out, and the guys come around and say, hey, Joe, what's all this about? You're playing jacks, you know, going back to your childhood again? My daughter gave them to me for my birthday. Oh, how cool. Can I try them too? It's a whole different attitude. If he went out and bought them for himself, they would have thought, oh boy, this guy is going back to his second childhood. But when they know it came from the daughter, it doesn't matter what came from the daughter. You go to the office and you say, look what my son made for me for my birthday. And you hold up this card and it's the ugliest thing you ever saw in your life. You don't have any idea what it means. And everybody says, oh, isn't that nice? I wonder what it means, but isn't that nice? Everyone says the right thing, not because it's big or small, not because it's right or wrong, but because that's what's due in the circumstance. Now, if the man came to the office and he said, gentlemen, ladies, come to the window. You see that Bentley out there? My son bought that for me for my birthday. Terrific, huh? And they'll say to him, isn't your son 3 years old? Yes, he's 3 years old. But we went through town and we looked around everywhere. And when we went by the Bentley dealer, my son says, Daddy, that's your car. Daddy, that's your car. I give that car to you, Daddy. That's your car. Well, what else could I do but go buy it? He gave it to me. Your three-year-old son gave you a Bentley. Pretty cool. What bank did he rob? You know? He didn't rob any bank. He gave it to his father in whatever position he could hold to give it to his father. And his father was able to fulfill it. Of course, you know, you can sometimes encourage a little child to give you something else. And that's not hard to do. Son, I'd rather have an elephant. Okay, Daddy, you can have an elephant. And then they go to this toy store and buy an elephant. A little more in the range. But, you see, many people want the moon, and they haven't even taken care of the earth. Many people want the stars, and they haven't even paid their own light bill. To dream for these things, to aspire for these things, is great. But when you aspire for them, you say, I now have the moon, and I have the bridge to get me back and forth. I now have a beautiful car, and I have the money to maintain it. Big or small, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I gave Mark a little race car when he was a child, gasoline-operated remote control. Classy little car. First thing he did with it was run it full speed right off the table. Choing! And it bounced on the floor and came all apart, and then he put it back together again. And then he ran it full speed. And I said, Mark, you have to learn to do gentle with it. And he says, oh, it's more fun going full speed. And I said, okay. You see, I gave him the gift. I didn't have to give him the limitation of the gift. And so he ran it off the table, he ran it into the wall, he ran it down the street, he ran it everywhere. And pretty soon it ran out of running. It came apart and couldn't be fixed. And he just had a wonderful time with it. My adult attitude toward it was, don't destroy it, keep it so you have it to play with. Well, he had it to play with. He played with it until it was no longer playable. And then he put it aside with other things that were no longer playable. But he thoroughly enjoyed it. It did what he wanted to do. I put limitations on the gift because it's not the way I would handle the gift. Whereas if I release whatever I give without any limitations, that's great. Like I tell you about my wife, I give her a few dollars now and then to in meal tickets at a local restaurant because she likes to go to that restaurant. And so I give her this coupon to go there, and then she goes there. But she takes her friends there, and she buys them meals. So she takes two or three of her friends there, and in no time, her coupon is used up. And I say, Faith, why don't you just let them pay their way and you pay your way, and then your coupons can go a long way. She says, well, it's fun to share. It's fun to give. It's fun to do this. She has some other friends who are reasonably well-to-do, and she's always giving them gifts. And I ask her, I say, Faith, why are you giving these people gifts? Because I like them. Because they're always doing nice things for me. And it's my way of saying thank you. And I said, but your budget doesn't call for giving gifts. She says, my budget doesn't call for anything, but I give gifts because I want to. And I said, well, you wouldn't have enough to eat with and pay your bills. She said, well, so I leave the lights off for 1 month. Now, that takes a pretty generous type of person, a person who feels that sharing is so much more important than having. We feel, I'm sure from my experiences with all of you, that having is more important than giving. Someday, you'll get to the point where giving is more important than having. It's not that you have to give it because they need it. Her friends do not need the gifts that Faith gives to them. In fact, they probably wouldn't even want the gifts that she gives. But because she gives them in such love, because she gives them in such delight, they think she is the most wonderful lady in the world. And she is. You too are the most wonderful person in the world when you give without limitation. Not because someone needs it, like going into a restaurant and seeing this bum there who hasn't got a penny, and you buy a meal for him and then you quickly leave the restaurant. And you come back the next day and you order something and the waitress comes up to you and says, I gave that meal that you asked me to give to that bum there, and do you know what his name is? Mr. Rich. He just likes to wear old clothes. He likes to look, you know, bummy, because he can afford it. But he could buy the store if he wanted to. And I said, well, so, big deal. And you know what he said when I gave him the meal? No. He said, thank you, ma'am. If someone was so loving and thoughtful to me, here's $200. Now, anytime anybody else comes in here that you think needs a meal, you buy them a meal on me. Now, you would say, that fellow didn't need it, and he didn't. He didn't want it. He didn't need it. But he thoroughly enjoyed it. He thoroughly enjoyed this meal that was paid for by somebody else as a gift for him. And then he wanted to extend that gift further. Now, if you paid for that man's meal and you found out that he was Mr. Rich, you say, my God, I wasted the money. No, you never waste anything. You gave it because your heart said, let's share. Not because the guy needs it. Because he'll survive if he is a street person. He'll survive for days. We've gone on 30-day fasts. We've gone on 60-day fasts. We've done all of these various things. You don't really need it. You might think you need it, but you don't need it. But you give because it's your nature to share yourself. And it's not how big or nor how small it is. It's that you give it without any strings attached. Now, can you think how you would do this? During the OM this morning, I spoke about a gift that we might give to Stefan. Stefan is the president, and he's a very fine man. And the gift that we might give to Stefan would be to take all his clothing, all his personal items, all the things that he is accustomed to thinking are his to use, even though he's a monk here in the monastery. Take them all and dispose of them. And then when he comes back from his trip, take all of his clothes and all of the things he had with him that he felt were his possession, my shoes, my hat, my car, my this, and dispose of them. And have him just be naked as a jaybird. Nothing. Nothing in his possession. And then give him some money and say, now go buy some clothes for the president. Go buy whatever you think the president would like to have or need. Now you see, when he goes and buys for the president, he's not buying for himself. He will use it because he's the president. But could he come back and find that all of his little trinkets, all of his clothing that he had come to depend on, are no longer there? I wore those shoes, now they're really comfortable, now they're gone, you know. Well, is he possessed by anything? How would you feel if you went on a vacation or you went on a trip and you came back and all the things that had been sort of your possession, your life stock, your clothing that you left behind, your things, were missing? Hey, who took my stuff? Ah, your stuff, huh? You're in the monastery, you don't have any things. There is no possession here. We're teaching non-possession. Can you handle that? Well, boo-de-boo-de-boo-de-boo-de-boo. I was planning on doing this, and I was planning on doing that, and this was necessary for this, and that was necessary for that. But you made a mistake. What do you mean a mistake? You said, my things. Who went into my barrel where my clothes are? Oh, you have a barrel here that has your personal clothes in it? How interesting. If you're in a monastery and you have no possessions, you have no barrel. But my suitcase and my... What do you mean your suitcase? When you came here and you're a novice, you still have your things. But once you change from a novice to a monk, you have nothing. Absolutely nothing. You may use these things. You may be the only one who can use these things because they're your size. But you don't own them. And if you can get to the point where you don't own it, you have arrived at a glorious mark in your life, a glorious place of non-possession. But they are things that I'm used to. Well, go buy them again for the monk, not for your personal name. But that was so wasteful. It's throwing away the money of the monastery. The monastery is here to teach non-possession, to see self-dedication, self-determination, self-diligence, self-discipline. The monastery is here to teach being untouchable. The monastery is here to teach non-judgmentalism. And the monastery is here to teach non-possession. Are these things that you want to learn? Very few people do. Because even now, if I say, you have lovely hair. You said, yes, my hair is nice. Whoops! Whoops, the hair is nice. We're possessive of our body. My thoughts sometimes get me in trouble. That's very true. I think glorious thoughts out of the universal. Any thought I think has been thought before. It's just a thought from the universal consciousness, and I'm thinking that thought now. I don't possess it. I don't own it. It's not mine. It belongs in the allness, in the isness. If I were to go into each one of your chambers, and remove all things that I would conceive of that you might call personal, and dispose of them, and go into your offices, and take everything that you have there that you would call personal, would you shoot me? I think you would. I think you would. Be very careful that the very things you're here to learn are not becoming a possession for you. Because that can happen. That can happen so easily. That the little things and the big things... That's just my little ring. Anita had a very beautiful watch. And she turned it into Steph. And she says, this belongs to the monastery now. And that's very good. Now, If the monastery were to give the watch back to Anita, what would happen? It'd be her watch again. And so the monastery is holding on to it. Maybe throwing it away, maybe giving it to somebody else. And so the monastery gives the watch to somebody else, and then they say, and he says, oh, you have my watch. No learning took place. Even though she turned it in, if she looks at it on somebody else's wrist and says, oh, that's my watch. It's very subtle. Very subtle things that we're working with here, but they're very real. They're things that can cause us to lose our way. They can be little, they can be big. My thought, my goodness. My mama, my daddy, my house. Do you have anything, if you're a monk, do you have anything in your possession that you shouldn't? Well, if you do, you're keeping yourself from that wonderful state of bliss. But what about the people on the outside? You know, the people living in the world. They have houses, they have cars. That's right. And they're not getting anywhere near their bliss. They're not getting anywhere near their master consciousness. Oh, but they're having such a good time. Everything's going so nice for them. They have food, house, clothing, relationships. They have all this stuff. That's right. And they're possessed by it. And that's good. That's the name of that game. Now, you have come here with a great lie on your lips. A great lie on your lips. You have come here to say, I want to walk my spiritual path, and I am ready to give my all to it. And then as you do that, you have plans to go somewhere else. You have plans to use this as a stepping stone to something else. Don't. Don't. When you come to this monastery, come here to stay forever. To grow and be one of the greatest monks that you have the capacity to be. A monk, 100% a monk. Forever. When your forever ends and you go somewhere else, that's perfectly okay. But don't plan on the forever ending. Because if you plan on the forever ending, you're not giving your 100% attention to the program. It's a little thing. It's a little thing. I want to be a monk. I want to walk my spiritual path. Really? How sincere are you? What's the first thing they do in a nunnery with the nuns, and perhaps in the priesthood, or that is in the monkhood? They shave their heads. They shave their heads, which takes away that crowning glory of their hair. My hair! Oh my goodness! But once you release that, you've made a great step. Shave your body. Why shave your body? Because the adornment of your body is something that you prize and delight in. What benefit is there to shave it? Nothing. Except, are you willing to completely release any possessions you might have? It'll grow back. Your hair will grow to the top of your head. Hair will grow on your chest or whatever, but don't give it a thought. The thought is, are you ready to release and walk your spiritual path so that you can express the master that you are within? Good question. What is little or big? We make little promises and then we run away from them big. So I say to you, I love you all very much. And I see you being responsible for whatever path you choose. And if you're living in the world, go for it. But remember, keep your promises. If you're living at the monastery, go for it. But remember, you're not here to be stroked. You're here to have a constant series of tests to see where you stand on your road. You're all fantastic, and I love you very much.